How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick. And as always, I'm joined by my good buddy, Ronnie. Ronald, how's it going over there in Spain?
Yeah, it's buenos. It's buenos. It's not South Africa, unfortunately.
Full month, Duolingo, and you now know the word. What was it?
Buenos.
Buenos. What does that mean? Good.
It means good. Good.
There we go. Okay, our weekly Spanish lesson from Ronnie. Yeah, I was bleak with you this weekend, and I messaged you as such because I know you were missing home a little bit, and we spoke about it in the week. And then, you know, I had my buddy Ronnie been in South Africa on Saturday. I don't know. I might have found myself brying, watching a bit of rugby. You know, it was just the Six Nations that was on. But no. I found myself firstly at the Pampoenfees, or for our foreign listeners, the Pumpkin Festival. And then later at St. Parrow's Day for the Jack Parrow concert. But let me just start and tell you about this Pampoenfees, Ronnie, because we arrive at the gate of this place. And my buddy Linza, he owns the Nut and Owl. You guys would have seen it on the socials. It's the tiniest pumpkin you've ever seen in his hand. And they're like, oh, yeah, you guys are here to enter the competition. And it's a competition for the biggest pumpkin. So like, yeah, they don't charge us entrance, saves us $150 on the way in. And we go in there. And I'm not kidding with you guys. I was impressed by the size of these pumpkins. Ronnie, I think I sent you a photo, hey? 730 kilos, the winning pumpkin.
That's unbelievable. And Linz's one was less than 500 grams.
No, it was, I think they said 4 grams.
That's not 4 grams.
Well, on that massive scale, it's not going to pick up the proper weight of that little thing. But I mean, we went from craning pumpkins in to be weighed to Linz's holding it on two fingers. Like, that's the size comparison. I'll definitely pop a picture up on the socials because it was quite entertaining.
But yeah, I noticed that the extended punted family was away when some of the results came in a bit slow. There was a bit of a trickle feed in terms of Six Nations results coming out. So was it a day off for the extended punted social media team, I presume?
Yeah, it was a bit of a difficult one because, you know, I had the farm boys up here, Ashley and Linza, and now they're in the city. They want to go and see the city. So somehow I find myself being spoken into going to St. Parrow's Day at Loftus Park.
You make it sound like going to a Parrow festival is like something we'd never do in our lives. We've been to our fair share of festivals, right?
But I mean, we were raised with Jack Parrow in Hatfield Square back in the day. So I was like, it can't be that bad, right? Oh, Ronnie, right. We got there. We must have been about 10 years older than everybody else in that place. One. Number two. You forget what it's like at these big festivals. You can't hear a bloody word that anyone is saying. So Linza keeps talking to me, and I pulled a trick out of your book, Ronnie. So every time he speaks to me while the music's going on, I said the exact same phrase back to him. I just went, yabba dabba doo. And he would nod, and it was the conversation was the chat was had. And yes, you forget about that. But unfortunately, I had to watch all the highlights. But it was fun. I mean, Jack Parrow is a good time. Always enjoy his music. We got Lofi as well. Yeah. Pretty cool. The Hevels Fantasties. So it was actually a lack a day out.
Yeah, Lofi's brought out some cracking songs before the World Cup. So yeah, that's where I discovered him and listened to a bit of his music. But you're right, could have been very exciting. I think it would have been more exciting, you know, had we had more hair and less back pain.
Yeah, the knees felt it the next day, that's for damn sure. But also, some of us here in South Africa, Ronnie, will be pretty chuffed listening to this podcast on Wednesday morning because Thursday is a public holiday here. And I'm sure, like me, many have taken Friday's leave. So it's a nice five-day break coming up.
You took Friday off. Right? Do you lawyers do anything?
Yeah, you know, sometimes.
Like, it just sounds like you guys actually just do nothing.
Yeah, on occasion we decide to work, but you know, we work so hard, Ronnie, we deserve a break every now and then. Talking about weekends, the past weekend results as well. It was the final round of the Six Nations. I unfortunately finished in 1,180th, but I did beat Ronnie. Ronnie came 1,478th. So tough luck there, Ronald.
Sure. Yeah. Well, whatever you say, but I think if we have any frequent listeners, they'll be sure to know that that is a total lie.
Oh, is it? So where do you claim to have come, Ronald?
Even had I got 0 points this weekend and done absolutely nothing, you got maximum points for every single game, bonus points included, you still would not have caught up to me and beat me on the block. So,
sure.
You know, sorry, dude. I am, what am I? I'm 78.
78. Listen to that claim. Okay. I'll admit it, Ronnie. You are 478. I'll give that one to you.
So I said 470. Sorry, there must have been a drop in the connection or something.
And then, Ronnie, I think it's only fair that we give a big shout out to our superest of brews, Jaco Botha. Well done, Jaco. You pipped it in the end. Good comfort behind us. You're supporting Ireland, but you are a South African. Jaco, if you listen to the podcast, please pop me your details. We've got some lekker May Fokcho merch coming your way. So do
get. But you said he supports Ireland.
Yeah, but I mean, we have to pick a team. And unfortunately for all, fortunately for the Northern Hemisphere, Rafka don't play in that competition.
All right. So he picked. So he decided rather than being neutral, he would support Ireland. So Jaco, I'm sorry to say, you should have been a neutral.
Fair enough, Ronnie. So let's take a look then at the first result from the weekend. It was the wooden spoon fixture that came about and kicked it off. Wales going down at home 21-24 against Italy. Italy's second win at the Principality. Tough for the Welsh, and they earn the wooden spoon, Ronnie. Failing to earn a single win this season. First in 21 years for the Dragons.
Yeah, my biggest regret is that I didn't actually back Italy. I think we spoke about that backing Italy was actually the safe choice last week, and I didn't do that. And regretfully so, I didn't get the points in Super Brew. And Italy just, yeah, well bloody done.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best Six Nations the Italians have had. They've got two wins and the draw against France, which arguably should have been a win. They potentially could have come away with three victories in this tournament. Very well done to them. And I mean, this game, they didn't have Andrzej Kapuza at the back. He'd had a finger injury, so he was ruled out. And they didn't miss a beat. That attack was still as smooth as anything. The Italians are really, really showing, you know, some good temperament with the ball.
Yeah, sure. Look, confidence, and we can only hope that it continues and extends into next season and the seasons after that, because, you know, it's been years now that we're talking about Italy perhaps getting relegated from Six Nations. And, you know, they took offense to us saying that, it seems.
Yeah, and then, Ronnie, there's some stats that make interesting reading from me, because if you look at this game in isolation, Wales scored three tries to the Italians too, so it's discipline that's letting them down there, giving the Italians more points. Tommy Rafael, 11 turnovers in the game, forward working very, very hard. It's a tournament record. It's 165 carries for Wales, though, for only three tries and four line breaks.
Mm.
For me, those stats paint a picture of a team that's working very hard, but not very smart. They're still a very young side, a very inexperienced side, and they're not putting that killer instinct on the pitch yet, but clearly a team that is definitely trying.
Yeah. Look, I'll put a little bit of an asterisk here, because rightfully so, Wales have done well in years gone by. But they are genuinely and it's most obvious that they are in their rebuilding phase with a very young team. And like you say, working very hard, putting a lot of energy and a lot of effort, but for very little reward. So we can only hope that they don't get despondent, that they continue working very hard, and that Gatland, you know, builds them up slowly to be a force to be reckoned with again.
Yeah, so I mean, talking about them rebuilding, this was George North's last game in a Welsh jersey. Bit of a sad send-off for a legend of Welsh and British and Irish Lions rugby. But Ronnie, also Warren Gatland coming out and offering to resign if the Welsh are not happy with him, you know. What do you make of that?
I don't buy it. Like, you know, sure, they haven't done too well at offering to resign, sure, but look, I don't buy it that he was being very sincere or very honest about, you know, resigning if they said so.
Some comments that I noticed on our socials this weekend, a lot of people calling out the Welsh coaching team for constantly moaning about the rules of the game and the officiating, which everyone still seems to think is a uniquely South African thing, which is quite a joke, because many of these teams speak out about it now. But there was a specific incident in the Wales-Italy game I want to talk about, Ronnie. And that was when the water boy, Welsh legend Neil Jenkins, came onto the field. And he kept shouting to Matthew Reynal, the ref, you know, blue nine, high tackle, blue nine, high tackle. And Matthew turned around to him and said, you know, you're here to bring on the water. Your job is to bring on the water. And Jenkins retorts back, your job is to referee the game. Now, where's this line? This line's getting very blurred, hey, Ronnie.
Yeah, and look, people are going to say South Africans on their high horses because of a certain incident with Rassie, a certain video. But yeah, look, it's been a lot of grey area. We definitely need to start laying down some boundaries and saying, look, if any team starts questioning the ref in-game, on-field, then, you know, that's an immediate red card and eviction from the game. And that extends to personnel, water boys included. You know, I thought Reynal gave him a couple of warnings and said, look, you know, you're not going to come back onto the field if you continue. But he probably should have just, you know, red carded the water boy. You know, let's start normalizing red carding the personnel and saying, look, don't question the referee. especially not mid-game, and then World Rugby needs to go to the drawing board about how we hold referees accountable post-game. But in the game, I've completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ronnie. It's not on at all. And I think it's time we see some action from World Rugby generally in this regard.
Yeah. Right, then the next game, which I thought was a very exciting fixture for the weekend, was Ireland-Scotland. You know, Scotland were in it right up for, you know, 85% of the game. I can't exactly do my maths, but it was, you know, it was right up until the end. You know, I was watching it at a friend's house and you know, it was almost time for the bus to leave, and almost missed the bus because right at the end there, all of a sudden Scotland were in the game, you know, with a very late try in the game. And, you know, I thought, geez, am I going to miss the end of this game? Am I going to miss Scotland finally getting one over Ireland? But unfortunately, they couldn't. And, you know, Ireland pulled off another Six Nations win in brilliant fashion. Yeah, it was a close game, but I'm not going to say that the Irish played very, very poorly. I thought that Scotland actually played pretty well, considering a couple of things. But yeah, look, again, we spoke about Wales working really hard. And, you know, in this game, we also saw Ireland working really hard. So 152 carries in Scotland. I want to say a lot of it was down to luck, but, you know, you can only get lucky so much. Ireland brought it right up to the try line a number of times, only for to bottle it in the end, and Scotland getting away with it repeatedly 5 meters out from their own try line. So, yeah, 152 carries for two tries.
A stat like that, Ronnie, I mean, it's a stat that we've seen creeping into the Irish game. Last year, you would have arguably called them the best attacking side in the world. And yes, they're still winning games, but it does feel like they've lost a bit of that killer instinct or finishing on their attack that they featured so strongly last season.
Seems like the BMT is a real thing with respect to Ireland. You know, once they lose the mental aspect of the mental game, they seem to sort of go into their shell a little bit. And, you know, they lost against a very strong English side, a very strong performance from an English side last week. And then it just seems like that, you know, that killer instinct went away a bit. You know, they still worked really hard. But yeah, it looks a little bit like they've got issues with their mental state when they get punched in the face.
Ronnie, what do you make of that Scottish situation where you've got a mercurial player like Finn Russell, who many would argue is the best fly half in the world, but he also makes
a schoolyard.
Yeah, he would say so himself too. You're quite right. But he also makes a lot of, you know, school level mistakes in a game. And yes, you can take Russie's stance in it. You know, how many battles are you getting yourself into? That dropping one or two is fine. But in the same instance, those are the moments that cost Scotland a little bit. If you look at Finn dropping a ball here, kicking a ball dead here, or even the line out stuff up where they threw it in and Andrew Porter snapped it up for a try.
Yeah, look, firstly, I want to commend you on the use of the word mercurial, so well done. Secondly, I want to take Russie's stance on this, right? So you play to your strengths, and we've seen this year in, year out, that Finn Russell, you know, he does some magical things, and you only do that when you are confident enough to try them. So I think it's going back to the drawing board and working around how Finn Russell plays the game, which is a lot of decision making on the fly. So that's, you know, that's very difficult to plan for, right? But your players need to start playing a little bit more touch rugby together, getting a feel for how Finn Russell actually plays the game, and being ready for those chip kicks, those skip passes, those, you know, running at an obscure space in the field, in the defensive line. So yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily a case of changing the way Finn Russell plays, but it's a case of, you know, building around Finn Russell and how he plays.
Ronnie, what about those lost turnovers from the Irish? They lost 21 balls in the ruck to the Scottish, and the Scottish are not a side known for their pilfering skills, you know, so something South Africa can definitely target there with a Quagga, Branas, Dion Free, you know, that's an area we can really target.
No, sure, I hear you, but I do want to say, though, that I thought Scotland played particularly well in that area of the game. You know, and it, like I said, it went right up to their own try line and only to then turn over the ball through whatever means they made it work. So, yeah, look, it's possibly an area to target, and I think no doubt we will target it, but I don't think we're going to target it because it's Ireland. I think we're going to target it because, you know, that's what we're good at as South Africans. And we know we're going to try to get our hands on the ball. Quagga's not afraid. Branas is not afraid to break a couple of fingers by getting their hands on the ball. So that's what we're going to do because it's our strength, not necessarily because it's a weakness of Ireland's. And I think this was perhaps not a not something to be too distressed about if you are Ireland, but it is something that you just got to put a bit of a check on and say, let's just make sure this doesn't happen again going forward, which is going to be very difficult if you're obviously coming to South Africa, where the guys are known to try to get their hands on the ball.
So it was also quite interesting for me at the end of the game to see all the Irish supporters belting out Zombies, that song by the Cranberries. That's going to make for an interesting listening in the crowds here at Loftus in Durban, because we all know South Africans have the real and original version of that song.
No, look, they've been doing it for years. They even did it at a Stormers vs Leinster game at Dublin last year. So it's all over their rugby, Cranberries, Zombie. But you're right, there is a little bit of cheek in the stadium announcers in South Africa. You know, when the Oaks start taking out their handbags and dishing it out, you tend to hear the boxing bell, ding, 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 go out over, call out over the stadium. So I'm sure there's going to be a couple of cheeky stadium announcers that are going to play Zombie, and then it's going to be a case of, Zombie versus Rassie in the crowd. So that's just going to annoy a lot of people. And yeah.
It's going to make for a good laugh. And then, Ronnie, there is something I owe all our listeners an apology for. And you do too, actually.
I don't apologize for anything.
Do you even have any idea what I'm talking about?
Oh, tell me.
So we had a good few people write in last week and tell us that we were completely wrong about Ireland being knocked out of 8 quarterfinals and we were actually being too kind to Ireland.
I didn't say that. Who said that?
It turns out that in 2007, Ireland didn't even make the quarterfinals. So I'm sorry, everybody. Ireland have been knocked out of 7 quarterfinals and didn't make the 8th one.
Well done, Ireland. You didn't lose in a quarterfinal 1 year of the World Cup.
Funny enough, also the year we won the World Cup, you know, for the second time, what was it?
Yes, just the second time. I mean, since then, I think we won 2 more over that, so a total of 4.
It's hard to remember the wins, you know. There's so many.
I can count our wins on 7 hands.
All righty. Then we take a hop over to France in Lyon. They played host to England. A very, very tight game there. France ultimately winning at 33 points to 31, thanks to Thomas Ramos saving kick at the 80th minute, showing Pollard vibes there, hey?
BMT.
Yeah.
So this is going to lead to the next point, though, that you've got on the agenda here with Gaultier. Is this a turning point for France?
Yes.
And can I comment on that based off the back of what you just said about Thomas Ramos?
Absolutely, Ronald.
So I don't think you can't just become a bad team 3 months after you were a good team. They were a good team, no doubt, in the World Cup. And now the performances haven't suggested that they've done too well, but I don't think it makes a bad team. And Thomas Ramos proves that, you know, ice in his veins, you know, Pollard vibes comes at the end. He's confident enough, slots a kick, comes away with the win. So well, bloody done. People are off on the backs of saying, yeah, Gaultier's, you know, maybe it's time for change. We've got to get rid of Gaultier. But honestly, the coach doesn't become crap 3 months after he was a good coach. Everyone will admit that, you know, they were contenders for the World Cup, and rightfully so. France played exceptionally well in the World Cup. And for them 3 months later, 4 months later, to not do so well in the Six Nations, it's not because of the coach. And some of those players, it's not because they're not playing as well as they did maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago. I think the worrying thing is perhaps that they were reliant on maybe 1 or 2 crucial players or key players. DuPont, I'm thinking DuPont here. And now that he's left, it seems like their structures have collapsed a bit. That's more worrying. I think the coach and the team is fine. It's the reliance on key players.
Well, I mean, for all the crap that everyone's dishing out France's way on social media and via the formal media, to be honest, they finished 2nd in the Six Nations, the same as they did last year, missing far more players, dealing with a World Cup hangover. Yeah, maybe the World Cup knockout hit them harder than it hit Ireland. But France also is still focusing on building depth, whereas if you look at the Irish team, they make very few changes. They play as close to an unchanged team week after week. So it's very hard to read where the French side is, but nothing's more certain than the fact that they came 2nd in the Six Nations again, and that is not bad.
A little bit of an asterisk, they did draw to Italy, but can we attribute that to a strong performance from Italy? I think so.
Yeah, now, France is loading up their team with these big boys over the weekend. We had Uno Antonio, we had Malvaca, Miofu, a lot of big boys on the field. And it showed. I mean, Furbank, the English fullback, he got knocked in the first 10 minutes, taken off the field, bringing Marcus Smith on, which was great because Smith actually had a stellar game for the English. But you know, very, very physical game. I think England's still learning to adapt to that physicality a little bit under their new structures. But it was the French subs for me, Ronnie, that really changed that game. Mavaka is a player I really liked at the World Cup. Strong physical hooker. I think when he came on, it added a lot to that French team and their pack specifically. Le Guerec, we spoke about him last week saying he's taking all these risky moves, but he's not proving to be a bad replacement for Dupont, and especially if you consider that Maxime Luku is actually aging. So they do need an understudy for Dupont that is a bit younger.
Absolutely.
Also, Ronnie, good sign from Borthwick's side. I mean, it was 30-25 at 60 minutes, and England didn't give up. You know, that's a part of the game that of theirs that had been lacking was that mental fortitude. But to come back, score, and actually take the lead in those last 15 minutes shows that there is something going on there in the English team, and they are starting to come together as a side.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think after the World Cup, we can all agree that England are one of those teams that wins and that does well in World Cups, right? So we could talk about the lack of mental fortitude in the World Cup cycle, but they do have something. They are a traditionally strong side. And look, it's only going to take time for Steve Borthwick to you know, build those structures, do exceptionally well with that. Yes, I got called out for using the word exceptional a lot. So I'll try not to use that. But yeah, look, I think, just give them some time. You know, with Felix Jones there, we're seeing their defense, you know, that rush defense, you know, it starts to get very interesting. We're seeing a lot of what we saw with South Africa in 2018, and we know what happened after that. So yeah, just give England some time. I wouldn't be too worried if I was an English fan. I'd be very excited for what's to come.
Yeah, and then it looks like this weekend also brought a curtain call on the career of Manu Tuilagi, 13 years in the English jersey. He's now signed a contract in France, which will make him unavailable for England. It was a bit of a missed opportunity because Pasola Tuilagi played for the French under-20s on Friday night. Would have been great to see uncle versus nephew, France versus England in this game. That would have been quite a cool sight, I think, eh?
Sure, that would have been very exciting. Two Tuilagis going at battle.
Then, Ronnie, this is something I feel like you would have said after a game for good old Uplands College. Steve Borthwick, after the loss to France, comes out and says, "We didn't lose the game. We just ran out of time." Can you explain that one for me?
Yeah, look, I think the game is 80 minutes. So it's who scores the most points after 80 minutes. Look, if we could rewind the clocks a bit, they had the momentum. They should have just kicked off the momentum a little bit sooner in the game. Perhaps they could have come away with a win there.
Then, Ronnie, I don't know if you have a player of the tournament, but I do, picking Ben Earl. I think he had a stellar season in England. His running game was destructive, and I can't wait to see what he does up against Ardie Sevier when England tour New Zealand later this year.
No, you're absolutely right. I didn't have a player of the tournament. I didn't think of it, but Ben Earl's a very good bet. I mean, yeah, he's playing exceptionally well. He's the word exception.
He's very better than the Big Ben. He's Ben Earl.
That's true.
Yeah, Ronnie, you know, I've got to sneak a dad joke in there once in a while, hey?
Okay, so then the Six Nations, yeah, a little bit of a wrap-up. I think it's worth noting, or that everybody should know by now, that Wales have the wooden spoon and Italy do not have the wooden spoon. So in a moment, we'll talk about some of the little interesting graphic that we came across on the interweb. But Wales only on 4 points. So 5 games, 0 wins. So, not cool. 4 points for them. Italy, unfortunately, in fifth place, which, you know, we would have hoped to have seen them a little bit higher, maybe fourth or third, but 5 games. 2 wins and then that draw against France, putting them on 11 points. Scotland, I think they played a lot better than what the log would suggest. They're in fourth, 5 games, 2 wins, 3 losses. Yeah, a little bit unfortunate, a little bit lucky to be ahead of Italy on the log on 12 points. England in third, 5 games, 3 wins, 2 losses, and on 14 points. And then, like you say, France sneaking up to second on the log, you know, after a draw against Italy. And a big loss against Ireland in the opening fixture. So 5 games, 3 wins, 15 points. And then obviously Ireland with their many, many bonus points, 4 bonus points, in fact, you know, 4 wins as well from 5 games with their only loss to going down to England. And they all the way in the front on 20 points. So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely makes for interesting reading. And it's well done to Ireland, back-to-back Six Nations champs. It's a big achievement. Equaling that Joe Schmidt got them back in the 2014-2015 season, apologies. So yeah, well done, Ireland. We'll be giving that one to you.
And then there's some interesting
an interesting graphic, like I mentioned, that we came across on the web. And I know you've shared it already on the social. So if you want to check out this thing, go check out what was posted on Instagram over the weekend. But it's just the Six Nations standings from 2000 to 2024. And I think there's just a couple of interesting points over here. I think Ireland are a very strong side. They have finished, aside from 2 years, there was 2008 where they finished fourth and 2013 where they finished fifth. Other than that, they've only finished third and above, which is fantastic to see from Ireland, a cool stat. Another interesting one, Ireland and England have never finished sixth, have never got the wooden spoon. So Ireland and England never winning the wooden spoon. That's a cool stat to have.
Do you call it winning the wooden spoon?
Winning the wooden spoon, I think, yeah, if you get the wooden spoon, you call it winning the wooden spoon. Everyone else getting the wooden spoon. But yeah, Italy, as also we mentioned that they finished fifth in the Six Nations, but actually there were two occasions where they finished fourth, from what I could tell. So that's 2007, 2013, they finished fourth in Six Nations. So yeah, so they've been up there. France have been all over. They've been second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. So you know, they've been all over the place as of Wales. So, you know, we'll have peasant all over the show. But yeah, look, if you go and find this graphic, you can see that the two nations that are consistently doing well in Six Nations, England and Ireland. So yeah, that's exciting to be fans from those nations. Not.
Yeah, guys, if you want to check out that graphic, I have posted it to the social. So just have a scroll there to, I think, Monday's posts and you'll be able to grab it there. Yeah, Ronnie, well, with the Six Nations wrapped up and you taking us through the log there, we also have another log that, you know, may or may not show the best team in the world at number one on that log, and that's the world rankings. So South Africa is still sitting pretty up at the top. Ireland is in second place. The All Blacks have dropped down a little bit to third. You've got France in fourth, England in fifth, rounding up the top five. And then I think special mention should go to Italy, who are now in eighth place, knocking Australia down to ninth and Wales down to 10th. Can you believe it, Ronnie?
Honestly, I can't believe it, right? I can't believe that Wales, Italy have got down so high, but Wales have been all over the show. They've been first briefly at some point in history, but they've been at the top of the log and then right down to the bottom, you know, the year later. So they are very they are consistently inconsistent.
It's a good way to put it, for sure. Ronnie, a competition we covered a little bit last week, but I actually think we deserve to cover it a bit because it's great to see the Aussies knocking some of the Kiwi teams over. So just three results from the Super Rugby Pacific competition I thought we should chat about, Ronnie. And that is Waratahs going down very narrowly at home, 10 points to 12 against the Blues.
But narrowed the gap.
Yep. Definitely. Then we see Highlanders at home losing to the Brumbies, 27 points to 21.
I mean, that's fantastic to see.
It really is. And then heartbreak for Crusaders fans as they have now lost their fourth game in a row, going down at home to the Hurricanes, 10 points to 14.
Yeah, look, that's obviously fantastic to see the Hurricanes being, you know, continuing their winning streak and their strong performance, but a little bit surprising for everyone else that is used to the traditional big boys of Super Rugby, Crusaders, you know, just losing and losing and, I don't know, losing again and then losing once more.
Yeah, four times. Four more, and we know they'll be equaling another side's streak. Ronnie, I saw such a funny comment today, and it made me laugh with the Crusaders. Someone tweeted, you know, don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened. Reminiscing on their seven in a row titles for Super Rugby. You know, be happy that it once happened.
Yeah, sure. Look, I agree. That's still, they've got an incredible record though, right? So let's speak for itself. They can have a couple of poor years though, just, you know, after that incredible streak.
Now, with the World Cup Tier 2 competition done, we take a look back at the URC, which is coming back, Ronnie. Some big games here for sides, specifically the South African ones. Stormers lurking outside the top eight. Bulls looking to finish as close to the top of the log as possible. And Sharks searching for only their second win in the competition. So, first up, Saturday afternoon, we have the Sharks playing host to Ulster in Durban. Is this the game that the Sharks are going to turn it around, Ronnie?
No.
Yes, blatant, straight up, absolute no.
Look, at this point, honestly, I really hope that the Sharks can turn something around. I really want them to turn something around. I will, in my heart of hearts, you know, deep down, I will forever be a Shark. But
Yes, you guys have, I'm sorry, just let me down for far too long.
Yeah. Ronnie, I think the Sharks are narrowly going to pip that one. A number of Springboks will be available to them, so hopefully we'll see a good victory there. Later in the day in Cape Town, Stormers going on a string of home games now, which is crucial for them as they want to crack into the top eight. They'll be playing host to Edinburgh. What are you thinking for this one?
Well, firstly, I want to ask, why did they go play Northampton Saints, preparing for overseas games if they've got the string of home games at the moment?
Preparing for the Champions Cup final, which will be in London.
Okay, sure, maybe, whatever. Yeah, look, Stormers, obviously a very strong team traditionally in the URC. I know it's only been going on for a couple of years now with South African teams in it, but they've done very well. They've got everything to play for, right? Like you said, they're just narrowly outside that, those key positions in the top eight. So they want to get in there and they want to establish themselves in the top half of the log. But yeah, so by all means, do well. I don't like the Stormers still, but yeah, they seem to do very well.
Yeah, Ronnie, then we've got the Lions who will be away in Ireland. It's Connacht versus Lions, hoping the Lions can get a victory on the road, but it's going to be a tough ask to be playing in Ireland in this weather and take it.
Sure, not going to Ireland is not easy. It's terrible weather year round, 364 days of the year, it's terrible weather. But yeah, look, let's hope the Lions can pull one off here because, you know, they're also in desperate need of a little bit of positive results going their way.
Then the Bulls are also overseas. They're in Wales to take on the Dragons. I think the Bulls are going to take this one, Ronnie. I think they've proven to be a very strong side. They seem to have gotten a good balance in their squad now with their depth showing up nicely when called upon to do so. So I think the Bulls will take this one.
Absolutely. The Bulls are a strong team, best team in South Africa. And, you know, there's nothing that's can stand in their way.
Ronnie, with that out the way, then let's just take a look at a couple of the top news items from the week. And the first one is a bit of a controversial one with, you know, Rassie Erasmus speaking in tongues a little bit, saying, you know, Diamani's not the full package. That's why he's missed out. Many people raving about Diamani. Yes, he's very, very good. But man, you've got to trust Rassie's judgment.
Yeah, at this moment, Rassie can do no wrong, right? So, you know, he's taken us to two World Cups, right? He's put a crack shot management team in place. He seems to know what he's talking about, and we've got to trust what he says, like you say. But yeah, by all means, Diamani's playing really well. So I'd be very interested to see what exactly is the factor that's keeping him out of, say, the alignment camps. And, you know, but I still think, look, the alignment camps have proven in the past that, you know, it's not the team that's going to show up on the day. I mean, Jan Klusen was part of the alignment camps last year, and where did he feature? So Diamani still got, you know, if he's just playing well in the URC and in various other competitions, he'll still have his foot in the door. But I'd be very interested to see what Rassie thinks is not the full package.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, speaking now about Rassie, you know, with him coming back to take on a full-term coaching role with the Springboks, the gap opened up at SARU for director of rugby. I see they haven't gone for a director of rugby. Instead, they've gone for a general manager, probably the same name for this or different names for the same thing. But Dave Vessels appointed to that role coming up from the DHL Stormers, and Dobbo is taking over the director of rugby role at the Stormers.
I mean, let's hope that doesn't mess with what he's done at the Stormers or what he's doing at the Stormers, because he's done exceptional. He's done very well over a number of seasons with the Stormers. So let's hope at least he continues coaching the Stormers really well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go there and how they bounce back with the last few games of the season now. Ronnie, ticket prices for the Springboks are just proving to be more and more crazy. If you thought the Ireland series was bad, the All Blacks tests are through the roof. My absolute favorite comment I've seen on this so far is that SARU is trying to charge everyone so much that they're broke by the time they get to the stadium so that they can't get robbed outside the stadium. That was a very good comment.
Yeah, be careful now. We've received a lot of hate from the diehard Ellis Park fans, but yeah, look, we've been there every year since 2011, right? And Ellis Park's not great. Maybe that's why they're charging these higher prices. Maybe they want to, you know, I don't know, sort some stuff out there.
Yeah, and then I got tickets today for the Portugal game in Bloemfontein. They are very respectable. I'm sitting on the halfway line opposite the tunnel for 450 Rand. Not bad.
Nice.
Front row too.
Nice. Yeah, is it? That's pretty much where we sat for the Curry Cup final last year.
Roughly,
just adjacent to that. Okay. Yeah, that's fantastic to see it. Yeah, I would think could probably bump up the prices there a little bit, but I suppose it is for Portugal. So,
Ronnie, Gerry Flannery, our new coach coming over from Ireland, talking a bit to Supersport about how emotional this tour is going to be because it's his home nation coming to play here. And then the fact that he's been told to learn Afrikaans in 2 years and reckons he can do it in one. I think that's quite impressive that he thinks he can learn Afrikaans. I've lived here for 32 years and I still can't speak it. So,
well, I do want to make a comment though. I was in Dublin last year and I went to the ATM to draw money, to withdraw money. And you know, there was a button on the ATM that said druk. So I suppose the word for press in Irish is very similar to the word for press in Afrikaans. So druk, druk. Maybe he's got something that he can do there.
So what you're saying is he's already halfway there, hey?
Yeah, you can already say the word druk.
Yeah, Ronnie. What do you think of his comments surrounding the national anthem, saying, you know, he never saw Felix Jones sing it, but he is trying to get buy-in from the team should he sing it? For me, I don't expect him to sing it. He's here to do a job. He respects his home nation, but he's doing a job. I don't expect him to sing our anthem.
Yeah, look, I think the reality is the sports professional is no longer amateur, so there's more to it. Guys have been doing jobs, like you say. It's you know, they've come here to fill a specific role and then to move on. So as long as he's showing loyalty towards the team, I don't think he needs to give up his loyalty to his country by singing the national anthem of another country. So no, I think it's very different if you're a player and you're now playing for another team, you know, that's your adoptive nation. You should consider then singing the national anthem. But as coaching staff, I don't think it's necessary.
And especially in light of the fact, like you said, coaching staff can move to any team at any time. It's less about nationality versus actually being the player on the pitch.
Yeah, like what do you expect these guys to do after, you know, 20 years in the job, seven different national anthems?
So whilst we're on the coaching thing, then maybe good to mention Laurie Fisher is the first assistant coach announced by Joe for the Wallabies. Legend in Australian rugby, so it'll be great to see what he can contribute to the setup there. Also, British and Irish Lions tickets for the tour to Australia went on sale yesterday, Ronald.
Yeah, look, that's exciting, putting the British and Irish Lions aside. But yeah, Laurie Fisher joining the Wallabies coaching setup, I think that's very exciting with his legendary bucket hat. I think he's done well with the Brumbies in the past, so, and various other teams. So yeah, let's just hope that the Wallabies do better, right? We just don't want them to clunk like they do, or they have for the last couple of years.
No, for sure. We need to see them starting to build something decent. And, you know, last week we held out a poll to find out who everyone thought was the best team. Obviously, it's heavily biased because this is a South African podcast and the vote was resoundingly in South Africa's favor. Farrell coming out now and saying, you know, he says South Africa is the best team. Rassie coming out and says, you know, it doesn't really matter to him if we're the best or not. But for him, it's much better to take risks in between the World Cup and then win the World Cup. That's what we're after. And I think Rassi basically just echoing what every South African feels.
Yeah, that's just unfortunate that a lot of South Africans get pulled into the comments that trolls make on the internet, and you know, it gets a little bit abusive online. But that, look, I think the majority of South Africans do agree. We'd rather win the World Cup and be the official number one than the unofficial, temporary, pseudo number one.
Yeah, absolutely, Ronnie. I think that echoes it. And then Eben crowned back-to-back player of the year for South Africa, as well as Kanan Moody, back-to-back junior player of the year. It's quite a shock when you realize how young Moody actually still is.
Yeah, so he's going to be a big name, right? And is he going to be a big name for us at wing, or is he going to be a big name for us at outside sector?
I can't wait to find out. That's all I'm going to say. Ronnie, lastly, this Sunday, we have something really bloody epic to look forward to. Chasing the Sun 2 is coming out. I cannot bloody wait. I'm staying in Hearty so I can watch it on the big TV. I really, honestly, I'm looking so forward to that.
I'm busy booking my plane tickets to also come and watch it on the big TV. Yeah.
There we go.
Again, if somebody can just tell me, you know, is there some sort of unofficial place that I could potentially go and find Chasing the Sun when it comes on, when it's released? Please, honestly, I'll send you. Nick will send you a t-shirt if you can private message us some of this.
I happily will send anyone a t-shirt that can help dear old Ronald out. And then, Ronnie, just because we give Ireland a lot of shit, the May Fokchor moment of the week is going to Ireland. Big achievement winning back-to-back Six Nations, so I'm going to give them a shout-out. Very well done, boys. You guys have worked very hard. Good bounce back from the World Cup. And yeah, congratulations on back-to-back trophies. We'll see you here in July. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. My fuck job, that was luck.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.